All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, November 3rd. I am Doug Norrie, and that is...
James.
Davis. Come on, buddy, say your last name. We got to get the full info out of you. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com, here to help you win or continue winning or just help you out in general with FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. We have projections up on our site going up every single day. Optimal lineups for DraftKings and FanDuel NBA powered by Lineup Lab. It's a free three-day trial to that and just $29.95 a month afterwards, and that also includes our NFL projections. And honestly, if you need another sales pitch, head over to the chat room that we have on the site and just type in "is this worth it," and you will get all the answers you need from all of our very satisfied users. We've started NBA about as good as you can expect to start a single season in DFS so far this season, and looking to keep it going. And we're going to go into today with some of the picks and talk about some of our process and how we sort of go about putting together lineups and putting together our projection system for NBA. So, the big news today, obviously, is it considered a revenge game if the guy never played on the team that he's playing against but still wants revenge against them? Does Russell Westbrook qualify as a revenge game to you today?
Well, I think actually he qualifies more as a revenge game guy than Kevin Durant does.
I'm referring specifically to Russ.
People are calling the Kevin Durant side a revenge game.
Oh, really?
It's a revenge game in the same way that, like, you break up with someone who, like, you kind of knew it wasn't going to be a forever sort of thing. And then, like, you start dating someone, like, way better looking and cooler and funnier, and you see them out somewhere, and you're like, what did you want me to do? You know, like, are you seeing the difference between you and I here? You know? And so that's kind of where I see this. I don't see KD being extra super motivated, although I suspect he'll still get a lot of touches. But, yeah, for Westbrook, I think he's going to have a little fire in him.
I think the big question, and look, all jokes aside, we don't subscribe anything into, like, revenge being a narrative for why a guy will play better or worse, right? Like, and really, Westbrook doesn't need another he needs no more superlatives after he started this season. He's averaging basically a triple-double right now, which is – I mean, he's been gifted – starting off the season against, like, the Sixers, the Suns, and the Lakers. So if you're going to, you know, those are just typically teams that people put up their best points. He comes down, I mean, and take this with a grain of salt, comes down to earth last night with just a pedestrian 35-6-5, which is clearly, but I mean, against obviously a much better team in the Clippers. Is the only question here is, for DFS purposes, can you stomach on a bigger slate of games, five games, so it's not huge, can you stomach paying 12-2 on FanDuel for a guy like Westbrook against Golden State?
I think you can. I mean, so he shot 30 times last night, which was more than the 21 he did against the Lakers, but less than the 44 shots he had against Phoenix. These shot totals are sort of unprecedented. I mean, I can't recall if this was on the podcast or afterward, but, you know, you really have to go back to, like, the mid-2000s, around 2005, when Iverson and Kobe were, you know, kind of dueling banjos for people shooting 25 shots or more per game. And I discredited Davis as being likely to do that just because it's really hard for big men to create their own shot. But I think we could see that from Westbrook this season. I really, really do think we could see him in high 20s field goal attempts when it's all said and done. And so I do think the price doesn't totally reflect that level of usage just yet. But, you know, that's going to obviously restrict both his floor and his ceiling on a points per dollar basis.
Yeah, and the issue here with him too is you would – now, and right now, I'm just looking at our optimal lineups. Right now, he's in the third optimal lineup. And guys like him, if they're already showing up high, typically, you know, just because we know the system pretty well, typically all that needs to happen is for, like, another cheap guy to show up. Like, you know, we get a cheap starter with, you know, guaranteed minutes or something like that to move guys like Westbrook up into there. So it stands to reason on FanDuel that he ends up, like, maybe in that slot. Now, the problem is they're huge underdogs going in here. And we saw with Golden State the other night that they can just step on your neck. Like, this is a team that will... It kind of doesn't matter how they start because they can just have a stretch where they start just firing from three and it's just over. Like, that happened the other night with Portland where they went a little heat check to start the third and that game was just over, right? Like, it was kind of close going in at halftime. That is my concern with Westbrook, that he just, at 12-2, that there is legit concern that he just doesn't even see the fourth quarter. Like, you know, revenge aside and, like, how much he wants to play aside.
You think,
like,
his coach will just not let him play against
if they're down
this
20,
team?
If they're down 20? I don't think so.
I think he comes back in if they're down 20. I think you need to go, like, into the 30 range for him not to see the fourth quarter. And, you know, this is it is tricky because generally we do throw the narrative out the window and all that kind of thing. But in this case, I do believe the narrative is actually strong enough that will impact personnel decisions here. And it's really hard to imagine him not being out there. I think, you know, on a more qualitative level, Golden State and Oklahoma City are also playing the highest pace in the league, both one and two. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're getting the fastest pace game, a very solid total. Oklahoma's actually been pretty good on D this season too. So, you know, I'm wondering actually if Vegas is projecting this as a bigger blowout than it will wind up being when all is said and done. But, yeah, Golden State could absolutely run away with the game. There's no question about that. It's just hard to believe that it will happen with Westbrook not going down swinging.
Yeah, this game opened at 226 and is down to 223, so it comes for full 3 points down since open, but that's my only concern there. Let's move on to some of the other guys because we could spend a decent amount of time just talking about Westbrook. Give me a couple other guys that you wrote up last night that you see as possibly, like, let's go start here. Like, who do you see as possibly the highest owned or chalkiest value play at point guard today?
Well, okay, I'll give you that, and then I'm going to say that for a lot of positions tonight, we've kind of broken it down by tiers just because there actually were a lot of palatable options at multiple positions. But I think the chalk guy probably will be Chris Dunn with Ricky Rubio still sidelined. As he just paid this price going away in his first start. And, yeah, the price has come up, but it was like an easy 6 points or a 6X on a points per dollar basis in the first game. He didn't really do anything super out of the ordinary. He just kind of scored a few points, had a few assists. Probably the erratic thing that happened was the number of steals he managed, but you know, getting that many steals in one of your first NBA games probably indicates that that's a skill set that you possess. It'd be pretty unusual for someone who's sort of defensively indifferent to put up the steals total like he did. So I do think he'll be probably the most owned guy in a good matchup with Denver.
Yeah, for sure. The steals were out of bounds, but the good news on a guy like Dunn, and we've seen this with Thibodeau, is that you just need to be secure in your minutes with him, and then you're just good. And so Thibodeau is just he played 29 in a huge blowout against Memphis, and that probably seems to be like his floor in terms of minutes. They're not going to play Tyus Jones a lot. That's just not how Thibodeau rolls. He doesn't want to play a lot of different rotations. Yes. He wants to play the guys that he wants to play, and that's about it. So while you're not planning on seeing those steals again, you probably are looking at 5 more minutes worth of production, and the guy looked really competent. Like playing, he's fast off the ball on defense. Obviously, he was able to push the ball on offense. He's just a good player. So I think he's
considered a good shooter.
Yeah, he'll probably end up being the chalk. Give me the case for like a guy like Curry whose price has been down a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I also put Curry in the same kind of that big expensive guy tier with Russell Westbrook here. The case for Curry, I think it's more of a big tournament case here just because, you know, on a night-to-night basis, really anyone can just go off in Golden State. And Curry's overall just usage, time on ball has gone down with the arrival of Durant. That was to be expected probably on some level. But his price has gone down too. And when you can get a guy like Curry, who legit does have 60 fantasy point upside at 8,600 on FanDuel, the opportunity is there to really get away with something. You know, that's the metric I always judge things by. And I think there's some decent chance that Golden State just tries to feature him. They're like, this is where KD came. You know, I don't know. This is all just narrative street BS. But I do think he has upside there. I'm a little troubled just by the fact that Curry really hasn't paid this price at all yet so far this season. That's not a welcome sign by any stretch, but yeah, I suspect that for big tournaments you could do a lot worse.
Well, the reason he's not paying the price is not because he's not scoring, it's because he's not doing anything else, right? The big thing with Curry in the past with Curry is he's not Westbrook, but he would grab weak side rebounds and the assist numbers were there and the steals. He's not doing any of that right now. Like, and you know, we talked about this a little bit on the podcast last time, but you know, Durant shifts the makeup of just basically everything they're doing on defense on defense as well as offense, right? And so if those numbers just aren't going to reappear, and they're likely not, like he's just not going to trend himself back up to probably a 7 assist per game guy or whatever. Just because I just don't see.
Yeah, Durant creates a lot of his own shots.
Exactly, and that stuff's not going to be there. I don't think this is the floor on Curry's price at this point. Like I don't 8600. I can see him getting down to like the 8,000 range at some point. Just a few more games, like a blowout here, a bad shooting game where he doesn't put up the other peripheral stats. So anyway, the Curry thing, I don't think we've seen the basement on. There will be a time when he's a fair cash game value because I think the price continues to drop.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Have we adjusted him down in the system yet, by the way? Because, you know, most of the stuff is automated, but I just didn't know.
I've adjusted. I'm not sure anyone cares about this, but I have adjusted down his other base stats because I just don't, based a little bit on what I don't, again, like we don't make overcorrections too early in the season because like there's just too much wonkiness in terms of who teams have played and you just really can't. Like, so for instance, a lot of people will look at defensive versus position stats to kind of inform how they want to do things early in the season. And those things, I would be wary about really subscribing to any of that where you can find them on different outlets, because you know, if you played a guy like Westbrook or Davis, like in the first couple of games, you're going to look bad against those positions, and it just might not be the truth. So anyway, we don't like to just go.
I think people do care about how the sausage is made, though. I mean, if you want who to play tonight, just make sure you show up 10 minutes before lock and click calculate on the optimal lineup. So
right.
I do think people care. The system has also just been so successful both last year and this year that I think it's relevant.
Right. No, it's definitely relevant. And we have downgraded some of those other stats. Because this is one of those situations where we just do not believe that they're going to be coming back. A couple other guys you mentioned here, just in terms of value plays, you know, at point guard, you mentioned guys like Lawson, Moutier, Payton. Of that group, does one of those guys kind of stand out above the rest to you?
Yeah, they're all kind of doing different things for you, I think. Moutier and Payton, I kind of wrote up as just like the guys who are going to feel solid for you. I don't think they're tremendous bargains, but I also don't think they're overpriced either. So, you know, you kind of get what you pay for there. It's more like for people who still do construct lineups by hand, I think either of those are reasonable options if you just find yourself with $6,000 left over. I do think Lawson still has, you know, potentially a bigger ceiling than we've seen so far. Sacramento really hasn't had a normal game yet. Like Boogie's been in foul trouble. There's been blowouts. There's been like overtime. So just a lot of weirdness. Orlando this season has the fifth worst defensive efficiency rating in the NBA. So I think there's a big Lawson game coming from somewhere. And actually, I think he's also a reasonable guy if you just want to go double cheap at point guard. You know, I'm not sure that's the way you're supposed to go tonight, especially to your point. Like if we get more value elsewhere, it'll be nice to pay up for Westbrook. But I could see a scenario where going double cheap makes sense.
Yeah, and just back to Moutier for a second. Will Barton is gonna sit out tonight, and Moutier's been seen. Moutier's problem is he can't shoot at all. It doesn't seem like a problem he's been able to correct in the offseason. He's sort of come right out of the gate taking more shots at a worse percentage this year, so problem not solved on him. But Barton does open up a decent amount of shots in that offense. He was taking about 11 per game, and I don't think it all goes to Moutier, but it stands to reason that some of that is going to be redistributed, and it's definitely not from all the guys off the bench, like Chandler, Gallinari, who we'll get to soon. So I could see Moutier's, you know, shots going up a little bit, but again, the guy, poor guy, just can't shoot.
And I'm also not convinced. Like, I think Dunn, you know, this all steals aside, it's often tough for rookie point guards to transition right in and be shut down defenders if there's such a big part of the offense. So yeah, I think Moutier could be very solid.
On the shooting guard, we have, you know, you tiered this out a little
Let's go by tiers.
Yeah. Okay, so we don't, okay, so, okay, the upper tier here is, in terms of price, is Giannis, though you kind of made a note about him without fully writing him up. On a night with Westbrook at 12-9, is Giannis like considered a safe play at this point at his price? I mean, what are your thoughts on him?
Well, yeah, this is ultimately the note I made on Giannis was, he'll either be the guy you want to play because this is where you're supposed to spend up, or he won't be. But I couldn't really determine that out of the writing last night just because right. The system hadn't rolled over just yet. But, I mean, indicators early on are that he could very well be the guy you want, right? I mean, last game, 24-10-7 with two blocks and a steal. He just plays every position for them. He's legit kind of their only offensive weapon, so and their best rebounder. He's just a really unusual player. Indiana, not a fantastic matchup, so that's why, like, for me, I kind of rather just take a guy like Westbrook. I understand they're not the same price, but just with the understanding that game has a total of 226 and this game has a total of 213, like, just pretty crazy. But I think he's a very reasonable option if it turns out the shooting guard is the place where you're going to spend up. I'm just not sure that's where it is.
That 213 is the second highest total on the slate, It does project to be high scoring. You know, we were joking about we were kind of having this discussion about defensive versus position before and saying why it's hard to trust those stats also because you're not sometimes clear about what sites are labeling, what position they're labeling guys, right? So, like, it's unclear about what position Giannis even plays. Like, and it kind of depends on the rotation. There's times where he's point guard. There's times where he's the shooting guard. There's times where he's the three. And then there's just times where the Bucks as a whole aren't sure. So, you know, I was watching the game the other night, and they inbound the ball to Dellavedova, and Giannis runs up to him to grab it to dribble up the court, and Dellavedova just kind of holds it, and then they both look at the coach. Like, they just didn't even know. They didn't know who was supposed to bring the ball up, you know? And then Giannis kind of jogged up the court, staring at Kidd, wondering, like, you know, did I mishear something? Like, who's the point guard in this team? I mean, that's what happens in, like, rec teams, right? It's like, no, Joe's supposed to be bringing it up. No,
time out.
You said Danny was bringing it up this time. He's the point guard this time. You know what I mean? Like, if the team's not, I mean, look, maybe I just took, like, one little possession and extrapolated it out to the rest of the team. I don't think that's really fair, but that just is not a thing that happens typically on teams, right? Like, you don't see two guys just standing in the backcourt wondering who's supposed to dribble the ball up in a certain possession. So, anyway, this is a long way back to sometimes why it's hard to trust defensive versus positions, because you're just like, well, what do they have him labeled as? Because it's just unclear. Anyway, the dude's been a monster so far this year. He's clear that he wants to do everything. We always worry about the Bucks minutes a little bit. He's not the guy we really worry about. It's so funny with these, like, you could very much see a situation where you don't pay for Westbrook and you kind of just pay for everybody else on the slate, and that gives you a really, really high floor. So I'm not sure what's totally correct here at 11:55 a.m. Eastern, you know, before the game. But yeah, I'm with you on Giannis possibly just being the guy, though. I don't know. In the next range, give me the next tier after him.
Sure. So I actually lump them by kind of their identity this season or their role. So I have the kind of the new situation. We're not exactly sure where things are headed, but they look underpriced guys. So that's a mouthful to say. I think these guys have pretty high upside, and that was Oladipo and Zach LaVine. Oladipo, I think, is a very interesting guy to keep an eye on so far this season, because so he's added 3 minutes per game to his totals and added 3 shots as well. So it was higher when I wrote it up last night, but this is adjusting for last night's performances as well. But he's shot terribly so far, and I don't know. You know, sometimes you move to a new situation and they're just not creating the same looks for you. And that's a real thing. But very frequently we see, like, I remember when Rudy Gay first moved to Sacramento, like, his shooting percentage went way up and then eventually normalized out. Like, I think generally speaking, these things tend to normalize back to career levels unless the situation is just drastically worse or better. I find this to be kind of a lateral move for him. And I suspect that when things all come out in the wash, he'll be basically that same guy from the past, the 44%. From the field and 35% three shooter. And if he is that guy on this opportunity, he's just underpriced.
You know, you mentioned LaVine too. Yeah, I'm with you. Oladipo is a guy that this might be the floor we see on his price, I suspect.
Or they're just going to get sick of putting him out there and letting him shoot. But after the high profile trade, really hard to suspect that that's going to be
the case. Well, they don't see, unlike the Magic, where they had some other guards with Skiles and just being all over the place in his minutes and kind of yanking him early because he would just get frustrated with the way he ran a play. I mean, that Magic situation was a total mess last year. But the Thunder don't have, like, a backup option after him, right? Like, there's no other guy they can really bring off the bench that is anywhere close to the skill set that Depot has. So there's really,
he's a great defender too.
That's what I mean. Like, they're just, I mean, the Magic were dumb, but the so that I think I don't want to project the Magic situation onto his current situation. I think he's got a really long leash. I suspect they just have to have him a long leash. They don't have anybody else. With LaVine, do you see, you know, LaVine increased his scoring last game with no Rubio. Rubio's not a guy that necessarily takes away shots, but the offense definitely runs different without him. Do you see LaVine being more of, like, a ball handler in the offense now with Rubio? You know, at times he played backup point guard or even point guard last year. That's not really his role this year. He's been more of a two. And Tyus Jones and Dunn were able to fill a lot of the point guard minutes, though it does seem like LaVine had more of an opportunity. Do you think that sticks?
I do think it sticks. LaVine took 18 shots last game. He did only have the 2 assists, so you'd figure that they're really not going to use him in the sometimes he would just run point on the second unit, and that doesn't seem to be the Wolves' goal for him this season. But yeah, the usage is way up. I mean, or I should say the overall shots are way up. 15 shots a game on 33 minutes. Looks to be running a little hot in terms of field goal percentage, but I think it is legit. I mean, he can get to the line when things are clicking. He's a serviceable rebounder thanks to those legendary hops. I could definitely see. I think he's just frankly just worth more than this, right? Like, this is a situation where Rubio has left a hole in the Minnesota production and the prices haven't inflated to fill that hole just yet. So while Rubio's out, I think LaVine is more like a $6,500 guy. Throw in a good matchup with Denver, and I think he's just a good play overall.
All right. Tell our listeners real quick about No Halftime while I gear up a No Halftime challenge for you.
All right, sure. So No Halftime is a relatively new fantasy sports site where your opportunity is to make one-on-one fantasy challenges. So if you look at two guys like Oladipo and Zach LaVine, both at $6,000 on FanDuel, but you like one dramatically more than the other, you can just put out to the world and say, you know, I think Oladipo is going to score more fantasy points than LaVine. You let them pick one, or you let them pick the other side of it and accept your bet or not. And you can also troll around on No Halftime for other people's challenges. So maybe someone gets in there and they offer up the other side and they like LaVine. and they'll let you take Oladipo or even someone better. You can just accept the challenges you want and not take the ones you don't. So you can always determine that edge for yourself. You know, no hidden hidden sharks coming in to gobble you up or anything. And if you sign up right now using promo code DFSR25, you can get a $25 sign up bonus up to a 100% bonus up to a $25 deposit.
All right, so tonight for no halftime tonight, Oladipo or Levine, which side of that would you take? They're both sick. I mean, and I put them on as a no halftime because they're the same price on FanDuel at $6,000. So besides it being no halftime, there will be people that just are trying to make this lineup decision as well.
Yeah, I think it's Oladipo by a considerable margin probably. And that's just me trusting that he's going to return to his career levels and hit his minutes. So, you know, there's definitely some risk inherent there. I think Levine's minutes are arguably safer just based on the potential blowout risk. But like I mentioned, I don't see this as a 10.5 spread point game. I think that's too high based on especially how well OKC has played defensively this season. So I think Oladipo gets his minutes and does well in a fast-paced game.
And I know you wrote up a couple other guys in the article. Feel free to check those out. They're sort of on the lower spectrum, maybe more tournament plays. You can go check that out in the article. Small forwards. Okay, so the big news here, I know we said we're going to go through tiers, but I'm going to start with the middle tier, though, because I think that this is probably where the most of the value lies, is that Will Barton is not going to play. Barton had been in the starting lineup. Gary Harris hadn't really been playing because of injury. Where do you see, you know, a guy like Barton with his kind of usage and minutes, that is like one of those we need to take notice moves for a team. And where do you see it kind of trickling down in terms of Denver?
It's kind of hard to figure out, right? Because Barton was already filling in for Gary Harris. And when you start to go this deep, it's, you know, you're just speculating at that point. There's not a lot of good examples of Denver missing both of those guys with their current lineup construction. All that being said, I do see Wilson Chandler predominantly filling that role. He's not a classic two guard necessarily, but he can kind of do similar things, at least to Gary Harris, which is to say he can stand in the outside and shoot and occasionally take advantage of an over-aggressive defender rushing out on him. And I think he's just frankly too cheap. 4,800 is not in line with what his production should be in the absence of Will Barton. The other guy who, and I don't know, I'll call him a high floor play, is Danilo Gallinari. Gallo, he'll go out there and get a lot of usage even with Barton, and losing 30 minutes of a high usage guy like Barton can only stand to help some of the team's best shot creators, and Gallo certainly is that.
Yeah, Gallo already playing huge minutes, which is a great sign. Harris, just so you know, I just checking the note on Harris. He's already been ruled out. So this is just so many minutes for guys like Gallo and Chandler. They just do not have, at this point, they're so thin at the two. And I think that their goal early in the year was to shift, because, you know, they have some defensive issues when they play the double big. So, like, later in games, they were shifting Gallo up to the four as they played, like, a sort of a small ball lineup. But that, I think they're going to kind of have to go back the other way to some degree here, because they just don't have the horses now to keep going so small. But I do think the minutes translate to Chandler. If you got the news that Chandler was even starting, he'd probably be a must play for me at his prices, just because the usage was already there for him. He was already playing decent amount of minutes off the bench. Like, he was 30, 30, and 31 to start the season. And exactly. That's only going to increase to, like, let's say 35 for me at 4,500 on DraftKings and pretty cheap on FanDuel as well. That's just like, these are the exact situations we're looking for.
I think that's a great indicator that we touch on a lot. Like, a lot of people in the chat will ask us, you know, how do we pick between punts or how do we pick between new opportunity guys? I think one of the strongest indicators that a guy is going to be of value is if the team trusts him already. Yep. And if he's already kind of reasonable in his current role, expanding that role just means the sky's the limit in many cases. So yeah, Chandler, perfect example of that.
Yeah. And like I said, if he were to hit the starting lineup, and again, he's not guaranteed that he will. Sometimes teams like to just keep their sort of second unit rotations in place. So it's not totally clear that's going to happen, but honestly, even if I knew he was going to come off the bench, I'd be fine with him in cash games. Durant is the upper tier here. Is he, you know, the way he's been playing and the way that Golden State has been using him, do you think we are seeing, okay, is there room for Durant's price to go up? Like, he's 97 on FanDuel. I think he's like somewhere in the same range on DraftKings, as I kind of just stumble in before I can get to the answer. And it's 10-2 on DraftKings, a little more expensive. Do you think that 9,700 is like the basement on him? Like, where do you see his price going?
Well, yeah. So I don't know that it's the basement or the ceiling necessarily. I think it's actually sort of somewhat fair, which will make it ultimately matchup dependent. And that's why I recommended him in what appears to be a very, very fast-paced game with a huge total. The concern, of course, with Durant coming over was that he would lose a significant amount of his usage. And so far, that has played out. I mean, just 17 shots a game versus 19 and roughly the same minutes last season. Particularly, his threes have gone off a cliff. He's averaging fewer three-point attempts per game than in any season since 2008-2009. So none of those are very welcome signs. But the thing about it is that he's making up for a lot of it in terms of just overall efficiency. I mean, he's getting better looks. He's shooting 57% from the field this season. So that's just insane. He's getting to the line at a better rate than he has in a few years. He's rebounding fairly well and also playing tough D. Blocks and steals both up for him too. So I think Durant, very strong play. He does not appear to be the odd man out, at least at this point. And you sort of wonder, like, Golden State's always had this culture of kind of taking turns on a night-by-night basis who the star is going to be. And I do wonder if, you know, Clay and Curry and whoever else went to make that sale on him in the Hamptons, if they got together and said, listen, dude, we don't care about being the star. Like, if you want to come in and shoot a lot, whatever, go right for it. Because that appears to be how it's played out so far.
And so for him, like, you know, that no halftime theme, around the same price as LeBron against Boston, you know, they don't have the same, anywhere close to the same kind of total. But, you know, is Durant, like, even just a safer cash gameplay than a guy like LeBron?
I think he is. Yeah, I mean, and I think he's safer in a number of ways. Safer in that he will be the most owned big money guy tonight, I would think, with all the revenge game narratives and so on. And the totals there, all the contextual factors, and his year-to-date season performance has lined up. So, yeah, I have a strong suspicion that he'll be the most owned guy, and probably rightfully so. And so, you know, when we think about safety, you know, not getting your edge by going in the direction of LeBron, I think makes sense here.
Yeah, I don't mind pivoting to LeBron, like, in a tournament for that very same reason. If you think Durant's going to be just, you know, double the ownership, let's say, of LeBron tonight, then pivoting in that respect, if you look to fade a blowout one way and not get it the other,
sure.
I mean, Cleveland
is four times the ownership of LeBron tonight. I mean, I don't think people are going to be on LeBron really at all here.
Yeah, the Cleveland is -9 favorite, so the blowout sort of in play with against Boston tonight, though. I mean, it doesn't seem like the same kind of game script altogether. But, you know, for us in our system, the small forwards are kind of just breaking down between those three guys, and it's not really getting away too much into the lower tier of cheap play. Moving on to power.
Sure. Well, real quick note before we move on is we just got to keep an eye on the Jay Crowder situation in Boston.
Yep.
You know, he's a small forward, and a lot of the guys who might replace him are not small forwards, so won't really help you at the small forward position. But he has been ruled out for tonight and will be out about a week, so that's definitely a situation you want to keep your eye on. Try to figure out, you know, who's going to start in his place, where those minutes are going to go, because that could be quite a nice opportunity, especially given that it'll probably be someone quite cheap.
Well, and along those same lines, just along that Celtics line, moving into power forward, Amir Johnson last night, he, you know, Horford sat and Tyler Zeller got the start, though one of the bigger beneficiaries of that was Amir, whose minutes had sort of been all over the place, but lacking that another big man in Horford, it looks like Johnson, you see how about like a 10 to 15% minutes increase, maybe a little bit more. I'm not looking into season averages, but he played 30 minutes. He was a total beast, 23, 6, and 3.
It's about 20% increase. Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you still see him? I'm just looking up with the Horford news here real quick. He is going to sit out again tonight. If no Crowder and no Horford, is Amir like a safe power forward play tonight?
Oh, I sure think so. I mean, he hoisted our DraftKings lineup on his considerable back last night.
Yes.
On a kind of huge usage. And, well, I don't think he's like to replicate that usage necessarily. Like, that struck me as a little bit of a Brad Stevens matchup thing. He really doesn't need to do that. I mean, like, if you think about all the other stuff he did, just setting aside his 9 of 11 from the field, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks, like, that's just kind of what you can expect from him. Very, very well-rounded stat line, which is just going to necessarily give him both a high floor and a high ceiling.
You know, what do you see with the, you know, this is a lot after him, just in terms of the Celtics in general, like, can we trust minutes out of guys? Like, you know, if they're going to need to go a little smaller without those two guys, can we trust even like guys off the bench like Marcus Smart? I know this is not power forward, so I'm getting a little bit away from that. But like,
that's fine.
Marcus Smart, guys like that, Jarebko. I mean, like, do we need to just do – I mean, Smart played 34 minutes off the bench last night in his first game back. Is that cases where you can like trust that bench minutes like with the Celtics? Are the Celtics like almost too kind of all over the place? Like, I don't know. What's your just general feeling on the team, I guess?
Well, sure. I don't think you're going to play Smart on FanDuel because he's a point guard and there's just too much other value. Like him or Chris Dunn, like why would you not just play Chris Dunn there?
Mm-hmm.
I think the rest of the guys, it's just going to come down to who's starting, I think. I mean, Drebko could be an interesting option if he makes his way in the starting lineup somehow. The other guys, they're already kind of priced to move, right? Amir Johnson, Tyler Zeller. I guess a guy like Gerald Green could rise up into the role here or into a more prominent role. Like, he certainly kind of fits that 3-and-D thing that Crowder does, although in a very, very poor man's version of it.
Right.
I'm not going to be thrilled to play Gerald Green, even if he does wind up in the starting lineup.
Yeah, at this point, the team depth is really, really, really running thin, which is one of the big reasons that they're 9-point underdogs, right? And so there's no way they'd be this far down if it weren't for the fact that they're missing just two of their five starters at this point, with no real clear logical guys to sub in to kind of make up the difference. So the Celtics situation is probably the most interesting thing to watch. Luckily with them, thankfully, last night at least, we got that news really early on what their starting lineup was going to be. They announced Zeller like an hour and a half before game time, so I'm really hoping they do the same thing again tonight. So that is a situation we're going to monitor. After Amir, who are some other power forward guys we can... Because it looks like to me like the power forward list was considerably shorter than the guards list in terms of the write-up. Is it a little more cut and dry?
A lot tighter in the power forward position. I mean, the top guy on my list last night was Georgie Deng, whatever you want to call him. You can call him probably what he wants to be called. I don't know what it is, though. and that's just because, Thibodeau coming along, we've talked about this before, but Tibbs does just kind of choose his guys. Deng has had kind of an up-and-down history in Minnesota in the past, although they've trusted him more in recent memory than they did before, in previous seasons. In her first three games, super tight range of 35 to 37 fantasy points. The minutes are very, very solid for him. And Denver's kind of rotating cast of offensive first bigs doesn't scare me too much. So I'm going to trust the fact that Denver's pace is up to about the sixth fastest in the NBA this season, and that the extra possessions will just make a big difference for a guy like Deng, who can score in a number of different ways.
Yeah, again, with defensive versus position stats, it's always a little hard to judge early in the season. Denver has been slightly better against bigs this year, but I want to caution you about using those stats, because while they got just, destroyed by Anthony Davis in the first game, they haven't really played anyone with too much in the way of offensive, fours and fives. They play the Blazers, and the Blazers don't get any production from their bigs, so you can pretty much wipe that. Every team's going to look pretty good in defensive first position versus that team. And then the Raptors, too, get all their production from the two guard spots as well, for the most part, outside of Jonas. But, so this is where people say, well, they've been better against bigs this year. I mean, yeah, maybe, but this is where you can clearly just look at some historical stuff. Jokic and Nurkic, there's a reason they just can't play them heavy minutes.
Reed too.
They just can't play heavy minutes because they just can't play defense. Like, these guys do not understand defensive switching. I mean, and look, I'm not even an expert on this stuff. Like, I watch a lot of basketball. I would never, ever claim to be, guys like Zach Lowe or guys like that actually just watch tons of tape and really are just total, genius experts when it comes to that. Even I can see that they don't understand defensive switching, in terms of on pick and rolls. And they just aren't just body – they're score-first guys that can't play long minutes because they simply can't play defense. And people always ask, why can't so-and-so play more minutes? He's awesome. Well, yeah, he's awesome on offense. Enes Kanter's awesome on offense. He's simply unplayable on defense. These teams aren't dumb when it comes to this stuff. You get totally overexposed by running these guys out for huge minutes. And this is the case with Denver.
Particularly in the middle, right? Like, if you don't have a rim protector down there, or at least someone who can rotate over and contest a shot. Like, we watched that Denver game together, and Jokic was, even though he was crushing offensively and destroying the offensive boards, he was a step slow in rotation every time, without fail. He was always in the wrong spot. And yeah, I can see that playing out here too.
And so this is where, again, just going back to when you look at some early season stats, take it with a grain of salt. Look who they played. You need to go back and really look at who some teams have played to understand, what stats are real. Some of these stats do smooth out a little bit early. Minnesota is just a better, slower team this year. That stands to reason that's going to continue. But looking very specifically about DVP stats is just, it can be a little dicey and it can be very, very noisy this early in the season. So just caution you about doing that. You mentioned Ibaka is in terms of Deng versus Ibaka, Ibaka's a little cheaper. Do you see one guy as being a little safer than the other?
I mean, I personally do see Deng as being safer, although I think you can make a case for Ibaka. The Magic do seem pretty dedicated to, incorporating him in the offense. And just by virtue of who he is, he's got to be a big part of the defensive plan as well. One interesting note that I pointed out to you, earlier today, is that Sacramento is not playing anything like the blistering pace they played last season. Last year, they were the fastest team in the NBA, And this year they're ranking among the slowest. And, you know, again, that could be sample size and, you know, maybe Boogie's foul trouble has something to do with that. But it could be a personnel thing, too. I mean, they don't have Rajon Rondo this year. You know, things are different in Sacramento, like whenever you lose a huge on-ball guy like that. So.
Well, last year they had – they were so heavy on guards. Like, they had Rondo, and then they, you know, they had Collinson coming in. They also had Seth Curry to some degree.
And Bellinelli going crazy in the second unit.
Right, but at least those two point guards – and, I mean, I guess Curry, but not really – those guys push the ball a ton, and Lawson, they can't do that. And when Lawson's out, they can't do it at all, right? Like, they can't push the ball at all with guys like Garrett Temple. So, I don't think the pace, as long as Lawson is there until Collison comes back, as long as Lawson is there, they have to really slow the game down and kind of just work it to Boogie and Gay. And those guys aren't like big open court threats. Like, those guys are like play in the post, sort of get a ball into a matchup on a switch, like kind of players. And yeah, I think the pace thing for, like, so this is another thing. Like, I think the pace thing for the Kings is real while Lawson is there. And then we could see a dramatic switch maybe, you know, when Collison comes back, and then they're able to push a little bit more with Lawson off the bench. But I think having to rotate him out really just does slow down their whole, like, just sort of like what they're looking to do. I like Ibaka. Ibaka's like a weird guy, and people will jump in and say, you know, Ibaka's a classic, oh, he screwed me last time I played him guy. Like, that's like a favorite thing for people to say in DFS. Like, I can't play Ibaka, he screwed me. But he basically had one bad game so far, right? And that was a game that a lot of people played him against Detroit. So, of course, it's like kind of stuck in people's memory. But he's just kind of been steady. I like it. I think that he is part of the offense, even though some people have claimed that it was going to be hard for him to find a shot there. That's just not really the case. They can't really trust some of the other shooters, like in the post, like guys like Gordon, who have kind of just been, they've been way, way more variable. Let's finish it off at center. Center is my least favorite position on a nightly basis to talk about, because it just feels, it almost always feels bad. Is there any reason for me not to feel bad tonight, or is there like a light at the end of the center tunnel?
Yeah, not especially, unfortunately. I mean, you can go back down to Tyler Zeller. Well, I wrote him up. He wound up being a reasonable play last night. Not a great matchup with Cleveland today, but somebody's got to stand out there and try to get the rebounds. And between him and Amir Johnson, and that's pretty much it after that. So I do think that he'll be out there, and he's very, very cheap. So if you want to escape a typically bad position cheaply, I don't think anyone can blame you. But I actually do like Boogie Cousins tonight. You know, he hasn't really gone off yet this season. And, you know, we were talking about this. There's narrative around, you know, even internally here, well, the shots are down a little bit. But you really have to ask with Cousins, like, I mean, do you expect him, like, is this the new thing where he's going to have 5 or 6 fouls every night? Because that's what he's had so far. And I would suspect that no, just because nobody basically gets 5 or 6 fouls a night. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, he's just getting to the free throw line at sort of an unprecedented rate. I mean, if you want to throw out the one random game against Atlanta where he shot just 3 free throws, and you probably shouldn't do that, but otherwise he's been shooting like 16 or more. And still his average on the season is around 14 free throws a game. And still he's the whole offense right now. It's a very good matchup with Orlando. Nick Vucevic is, you know, he's very much in that category of like the Jonas Valanciunas, Jokic, you know, the guys who are good at some things as a center, but not very good when it comes to actually defending the opposing center.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think Boogie is a very, very solid play. And it's kind of weird to think about playing him with some of the other high-profile, big-money guys we got tonight. But as of right now, that's what the optimal is suggesting.
Well, that's why Orlando got a guy like Biombo, because they need him. They need him sort of spell Vucevic, or to even play them together, because, which you've seen them do this year, which, I mean, to me, seems crazy, but they'll even play them together simply because that's a clear sign. Like, if you want to know if a guy's a defensive liability, go see who they signed as their backup, right? Like, and if the guy is, like, the exact opposite, in this case, like, Biombo is the exact opposite of Vucevic. He's just a defensive-only center, and there's a reason they were kind of incentivized to get a guy like him, because they need to spell Vucevic on the defensive end. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw more minutes from Biombo tonight as they try to body up on Boogie, because Biombo can range a little bit out, like, where Boogie, because Boogie creates crazy matchup problems for people, because he will step out beyond the three, and he can also body you down. And the thing with Boogie, like you mentioned, you know, Boogie foul trouble is like the new Anthony Davis injury thing, right? Like, the guy is just such a foul machine, and it's like sometimes, we joked about this in years past, where it's like, you can tell, like, it's sometimes in the first 5 minutes of, like, what kind of game it's going to go for Boogie, and it's like, if he gets, like, that, if he, like, steps back beyond the three, puts the ball between his legs twice, and then just gets a charge called on him, like, it's kind of game over. Like, because he'll just do crazy stuff like that, and then he'll get pissed off, and then he's just mentally ruined. So that's the only thing that kind of really scares me. Like, same old story sort of with him on the mental side of the game. But otherwise, I mean, like, talent-wise, upside-wise, there's almost no one that has the same kind of ceiling that he does.
Yeah, right on. And I think, speaking of the guy who team signed specifically fill a backup's or a starter's weakness. It was Steven Adams. I think he originally actually was brought on board, or they envisioned his role rather as the defensive alternative to Enos Kanter, and then they just realized he was just straight up better. and while Adams is not super cheap on FanDuel anymore, he's 5,900, or I'm sorry, 5,300 on FanDuel and 59 on DraftKings. Again, it's the fastest paced game of the night. We saw him have some big time rebounding success against Golden State in the playoffs last year. And of course, in the absence of Bogut, I don't think Pachulia really, fills those defensive shoes.
No.
Nearly as well as what Bogut was able to do. So I do think Adams is in a position to thrive tonight. Whether or not he'll actually get the usage to fill up the stat sheet or not is anyone's guess. I wouldn't suggest him as a cash game play specifically for that reason. I mean, there's a lot of risk here. Westbrook shoots 40 shots or the team gets blown out or whatever, but definitely a really high upside guy that you should be aware of.
Yeah, well, you make a great point of just being able to, sometimes we can look at what a team has done against another team if we have enough of a sample. Like we mentioned this with Aminu the other night against the Blazers. Like there's little changes we can make, and just we've seen what a team will do against a team. And that's the case with Adams. Like Adams is a good fit to defend against Golden State because he is pretty quick laterally for a big guy.
Draymond Green.
Exactly. Yeah. And he can range out. Like he doesn't get totally destroyed on switches like some other guys do. Like, obviously you can play matchups against him, or you can get him into like mismatches, but he won't get crushed like a guy like Kanter will, who just simply like can't defend the guy he was supposed to defend or the guy he got switched onto, right? Like
Kanter sees Durant barreling down on him, it's over.
Right. So like Adams, you can see heavy minutes from him because that is something they can probably exploit on the defensive end and maybe even a little bit on offense. So I do like them. I kind of like the floor on him considering the price, which sounds crazy because I don't know. He wasn't a guy we really...
Yeah, he's not a high floor guy to me, but I hear where you're coming from.
All right. I think that is it for us today. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which spits out the said optimal lineups that we've been discussing all show for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can check it out for free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. That includes NBA and NFL together. And like I said at the top, if you want customer testimonials, we have plenty of those in terms of just, GPP wins along the way. And also you can just get those testimonials in real time. Go over to the chat room, just say, hey, is this worth it? You'll get the answer you need. And that is pretty much the best sales pitch that we can have is our users. And that's really nothing else. All right, buddy. I will talk to you again tomorrow when we talk a full slate of NBA. Can't wait.
Can't wait.